Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@TheOrganicView.com. In this special series called The Neo-Nicotinoid View, I will be joined by the president of the European Professional Beekeepers Association, Mr. Walter Hofiger, to review Bayer's claims about the neonicotinoid issue, which can be found by visiting beecare.bayer.com. So I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Walter Hofiger. Good afternoon, and rather good evening, Walter, and welcome back to the show.
Hello, June. I'm glad to be back on the show.
It is so wonderful to talk to you, Walter. Always a pleasure. Could you please just take a moment and share with our audience a little bit about your work?
Well, I'm a beekeeper in Upper Bavaria, somewhere between Munich and the Alps. I serve on the board of the German Professional Beekeepers Association and as president of the European Professional Beekeepers Association. And I'm the coordinator of the Apimondia Working Group on GMOs and the impact on the beekeeping sector.
Thank you, Walter. We're going to begin by going line by line of the different points that appear on Bayer's website, which once again is www.beecare.bayer.com. And basically, folks, what I will be doing is reading verbatim the items line by line, and Walter will address each issue. Number one, Bayer understands the necessity for healthy bees as pollinators for food production. For more than 25 years, we've been actively involved in finding solutions to improve honeybee health.
Yeah, that's to some extent a true statement, because Bayer has several divisions. One division is Bayer Crop Science around crop protection. That's the division that is producing, among other things, insecticides that we're concerned about. But they also have a health division, pharmaceutical division, that produces animal health products. And so when the varroa mite first appeared in Europe, the it was clear that acaricides that are used, for example, to protect farm animals might also do the trick on the varroa mite. So Bayer, in conjunction with some beekeeping scientists here in Europe, came up with a number of products that were essentially derivatives of their acaricides used on farm animals. There was not a huge amount of research involved to come up with these products. They were initially embraced by the beekeeping community because they were also recommended by the beekeeping institutes, but very quickly it became clear that these types of products leave residues in honey, and they also, after a while, no longer work because of the mites develop resistance. So most of the beekeepers have switched to natural products like organic acids, which can be used both by organic beekeepers and conventional beekeepers. And this division, the animal health division, continues to do research in this area, like they do for any other farm animal.
Thank you. Number two, Despite ongoing reports on substantial bee losses in some regions, the overall number of managed honeybee colonies worldwide has increased by some 45% over the last 50 years, not decreased.
This is a claim that industry has made repeatedly. Most beekeepers understand that numbers, especially global numbers on managed colonies, are have to be taken with a grain of salt, because even in a well-regulated country like Germany, the statistics about honeybee colonies are pretty terrible. In many countries, the numbers are distorted by the tax code, so that beekeepers have sometimes reasons to report more or less colonies. There is no real census of honeybee colonies in most countries. So depending on who you're asking, you're getting very different statistics. I think a much more reliable measure of what's going on with bees is the price of pollination, because supply and demand set the price. And in the U.S., you can see that the price for pollination jobs are going through the roof, which is a clear indication that there's definitely not an oversupply of honeybees. So another thing to keep in mind is that the number of colonies are determined at different times of the season, if people are doing a survey, and beekeepers are always struggling to get back, even after they suffer severe losses, to where they were before. So it's not as simple as simply adding the winter losses of every year and then come up with the cumulative loss numbers, because throughout the season, beekeepers are trying to split hives and recover. What is impacted, though, is even if the beekeeping operation gets back to where they were before a loss, the economic impact on the beekeeping operation can be severe, because you're not having enough colonies to produce honey, or you're not having strong enough colonies to do the pollination jobs. So this is a much more complex picture than what Bayer suggests here.
Thank you. Number three, bee losses are not a new phenomenon. Periodic increases in colony losses have been observed for centuries, such as in the 1906 on the Isle of Wight in 1975 in Mexico, the, quote, disappearing syndrome, and during the 10th century in Ireland.
This is definitely true. You always had local phenomena, local events. What is new is that if you look throughout the world, you basically have beekeepers complaining about losses now wherever you go, whether it's in Europe, in the U.S., in Japan. This is now a global phenomenon. I'm just returning from a few days of vacation in the Italian Alps. I met with the local beekeeping organization there. We had a dinner together, and the intention was to talk mainly about some positive events that we want to do together, but pretty quickly all they wanted to talk about was pesticide use in their area, because it's one of the most intensely used areas for growing apples and also wine. And this is something that is really new, that pretty much wherever you go, beekeepers are faced with a new situation that where they have losses year after year. These losses are no longer just local phenomenon, and they seem to be concentrated in areas with intensive agriculture and seem to go in parallel to the intensification of agriculture in these regions.
Thank you. Number four, in a normal bee life cycle during the summer season, some 2,000 worker honeybees will leave the hive to die naturally every day due to their short lifespan of only 4 to 6 weeks. The dead bees are replaced by newly hatched bees, so maintaining the colony.
That is certainly a true statement. This is simply how the superorganism functions. The question is, what happens if worker bees don't die at the end of their natural lifespan, but earlier, or if bees have trouble raising brood to replace the bees that are at the end of their lifespan. And you have especially companies like Bayer focusing very much on the impact of the varroa mite. But a colony that is developing rapidly like these like to do, their way of spreading is by getting really strong and then splitting into one or more swarms. So if they are losing too many bees outside, or they're not able to raise enough new bees, then the population in the hive is not way ahead of the varroa mite as it normally would be, and the varroa mite becomes the problem for the colony a lot earlier. So this statement is simply a statement of fact, but in certain situations and certain environments, the population dynamics are such that a lot more worker bees get lost and not enough young can be raised to replace them.
Thank you. Number five. The European honeybee is not a wild animal, but needs to be managed in the same way that domestic livestock, such as cattle, pigs, and sheep are, if they are to remain healthy.
Well, this is nothing could be further from the truth. Actually, if it wasn't for the varroa mite, if our bees have a hollow tree or another spot where they can build their hive, they're perfectly capable of taking care of themselves and don't need a beekeeper to maintain them. What is especially wrong with this picture here is if somebody raises livestock as cattle, pigs, sheep, and so forth, typically the farmer controls the production environment, the place, the pasture where they put out the cattle, the feed, what they feed by in terms of animal feed, things like that. Bees are indeed more like a wild animal. They have a large foraging range. They make their own choices of where to forage, and the beekeeper cannot keep them out of trouble if that the environment that they're foraging in becomes toxic. So it's If you want to understand beekeeping issues, it's much more important to understand the wild animal aspects of the bee rather than the management side of the bee by the beekeeper.
Thank you. Question six, or statement six, should I say. Scientists and regulatory authorities agree that bee health is a complex issue. Several studies have also indicated that bee health may be affected by many different factors, including pests and parasites, microbial diseases, inadequate diet, bee management practices, and climate change.
Well, this is also a true statement with the obvious omission that one of the factors, and there's a debate about how important it is, but one of the factors is certainly pesticide use in agriculture. So bee health is a complex issue. Many studies have shown synergistic effects between several of these factors, but it is certainly wrong to omit the impact of pesticides. Number two, it's wrong to try to approach this issue by saying, let's see if there's another factor that we can blame instead of focusing on the factor that oneself can control. So our approach to this complex problem is not to enter into a debate of what single factor is the cause of the decline in honeybees, because that discussion is pointless. All of these factors are always at work and interacting with each other. The question is more, which one of these factors can the beekeeper control? Which one of the factors can, for example, the farmer and the farm industry control? Because they are managing the environment that honeybees exist in. And the pesticides are a factor that can impact, can kill the colony or weaken the colony directly. Sometimes the pesticides interact with other factors like bee diseases. Sometimes the pesticides enable a intensification in the farming practices that turn the environment into an overall hostile environment where there are not enough foraging opportunities and where the diversity of especially pollen sources is no longer there. So what we are trying to focus on over here is to work with farmers on changing the overall farming system so that it's less reliant on pesticide, that it's more diverse, relies more on crop rotation, provides flowering crops throughout the season. And by working all of these issues simultaneously, we can improve bee health.
Thank you. Seven, it is widely believed among the scientific community that varroa mite is the main factor affecting the health of honeybee colonies.
There is clearly a debate in the scientific community about where the varroa mite ranks on a scale of the factors impacting the honeybee. Certainly, scientists that are closely aligned with Bayer are promoting this particular view, but there are many scientists that very much disagree with this view. From our point of view, it doesn't matter whether varroa is number one for number 5 on this list, we need to actually work on all factors that are negatively impacting bee health. And as beekeepers, we are certainly doing everything we can to address what is in our control, which is the varroa mite. And that includes working with Bayer Animal Health on the best possible approach to varroa control. So we're not shying away from working with Bayer if they actually have something to contribute here. But that doesn't mean that they don't have a responsibility to what's happening with their crop protection products, their insecticides. And there are a number of factors that that debunk this particular point. One is, a few years ago, I was invited to address the beekeeping community in Japan, and the subject that their conference was on was neonicotinoids. And it was put on by the Japanese beekeepers that are working with the native Japanese bee, which is naturally resistant to varroa. So they already have a varroa-resistant bee, but they're still having problems due to the neonicotinoids. Also, when you look at the recent decision by the European community to ban certain neonicotinoid applications, what was considered there was not just the impact of neonicotinoids on the honeybee, but also very much the impact on native bees like bumblebees. And bumblebees do not suffer from varroa, and they don't suffer from incompetent beekeepers, and they still manage to disappear at least the same rate as honeybees. So varroa is certainly one of the factors. There are also synergies between the varroa problem and the use of certain insecticides. One interesting aspect is that some of the varroa sites, the acaricides that are sold by Bayer, are neurotoxic to mites, but also somewhat neurotoxic to bees, and seem to have a synergy with the neurotoxic chemicals that Bayer is selling for plant protection. And one of the approaches that we also have towards Bayer is we should be looking at methods of varroa control that are not synergistic with your crop protection products. It doesn't make sense for the two divisions to both market neurotoxic products that may actually aggravate the problem. I'd like to make one more point on this issue of the varroa mite. The varroa mite obviously can be observed with the naked eye. So if somebody is investigating a colony loss, it's very easy to look at the colony, open some cells, look at some bees, and say, okay, there are varroa mites here. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the varroa mite is the cause of the loss. It may be just coincidental. It may be just a symptom. You can compare this to the AIDS virus. Initially, before people understood that there was such a thing as the AIDS virus, official records showed that there were a lot of people dying from pneumonia. But It's just the same with the honeybee. There are things that are happening to the colony throughout the season that weaken their ability to deal with varroa. And if all you're looking for when you're diagnosing a loss is the mite, because it's easy to see, you might miss the actual cause of the problem. I made the point earlier, a healthy colony in a healthy environment has such explosive growth that it's staying way ahead of the population development of the varroa mite for a long time. And the beekeeper can go through the season, do the pollination, produce honey, and then do the varroa treatment. If the colony doesn't develop well because of whatever factor, then the point where the varroa mite can overwhelm the colony arrives a lot earlier. When you then diagnose the hive and you're just looking at the mites and you're not looking at the history of the colony and the environment that it was in before, you might be missing the point. And certainly if you're a scientist who has been at least encouraged in some way to look the other way, we have certainly a lot of experience with that here in Germany, then they blow the varroa mite out of proportion. And we had a project here, the German Bee Monitoring Project, that was supposed to look into honeybee losses, and their budget for analyzing for pesticide residues was exactly zero. So if you're not looking there, you're not finding anything, and everything looks like a varroa case to you. That's our experience.
Thank you. Number 8, Bayer conducts in-depth research into the characteristics of both pesticides and biotech crops from an early stage to ensure that they do not negatively impact non-target species like honeybees if applied according to the specific label instructions.
Yes, this is not unique to Bayer. Actually, if you are a pesticide vendor, you're required by law to conduct certain tests to determine the safety for honeybees. Unfortunately, it turns out that these tests are completely outdated because they don't match the mode of action of neurotoxic pesticides like the neonicotinoids. So Bayer certainly is doing tests because they have to. We know from records that we've been able to discover that sometimes Bayer knows very early that there are problems and it chooses not to share this with the regulatory bodies or the beekeeping community. So many of the things that beekeepers discovered when the products were placed on the market were known to Bayer long before. So this is certainly nothing to brag about on Bayer's part. We had a conference here by the European Food Safety Authority, which is in charge of the approval process at the European level. And it was commonly understood that the tests that have been done so far are inadequate. If proper tests had been in place, the products that have just been banned by the European Commission would have never been allowed to be marketed in the first place. We as beekeepers have raised the issue of these inadequate tests for many years now, and Bayer, along with Syngenta and other chemical manufacturers, have fought a update of the test regime every step of the way. Usually, they do this by claiming that the new tests that are being proposed are not good enough. So at this point, they've been delaying the implementation of better tests because they know if the approval regime would be tighter, a number of the products that they're marketing right now would not be approved.
Thank you. Number 9. In Australia, they have some of the healthiest honeybees in the world, even though crop protection products are used intensively as part of an integrated pest management on farms. A key reason may be that they have no varroa mite there.
Well, obviously I'm in Europe, not in Australia, even though I visited beekeepers in Australia a number of years ago when the World Beekeeping Conference was in Melbourne, so I'm somewhat familiar with their situation. Certainly, if you argue the Australia case, you would have to also look at the situation that I just explained in Japan, where they have a varroa-resistant mite and still have problems with neonicotinoids. The situation in Australia has very much to do with their land use practices and where the beekeepers actually are. It's been our experience that if there is enough natural foraging opportunity for the bees, that they can recover more quickly from losses that they suffer from being exposed to pesticides. So we have some large beekeepers here that specifically move bees into nature preserves. They call it the detoxification after they've been exposed for pollination in for example, intensive canola cultivation. So this Australia story here is definitely not not proof of safety of their products. You would have to take a much closer look at which factors are impacting the bees throughout the season to conclude anything from the situation in Australia.
Thank you. Number 10. Neonicotinoid-based products have replaced many older agricultural crop protection products because of their effectiveness in managing harmful pests, excellent operator safety, and relatively favorable environmental profile.
Well, what they're trying to say here between the lines is that older products used to be sprayed. Neonicotinoids are designed to be used as mainly as systemics, where you have a seed treatment, and their contention was that a seed treatment is safer than spraying because the seed is coated, the pesticide ends up in the ground, and bees don't fly, 10 centimeters below the surface. But what has actually happened in reality has completely disproven this point. These products, number one, are much more toxic to bees than earlier products. A French scientist from a French government research lab has tallied up the acute toxicity of neonicotinoids compared to the acute toxicity of DDT. And just if you use the undisputed official numbers on the acute toxicity of these products to honeybees, you will find that some of them are over 7,000 times more toxic to bees than DDT. That's the acute toxicity. In addition, they have the sublethal effects, which have been discussed on your show many times, sublethal effects of neurotoxic substances are things that many of your listeners are aware of from alcohol. If you drink enough alcohol, it can certainly kill you. That's the acute toxicity. But well below that level, a few glasses of beer or wine can interfere with your ability to drive a car or walk a straight line or find your way home. And so the sublethal effects have to be counted in addition to this high acute toxicity. What we've also seen is that these are exposed at many points of the use of this product, from the seeding, dust coming off the seed, from some seeds never making it into the ground, contaminating surface water, from the plant then taking up the insecticide and bees becoming exposed through nectar and pollen. So there's also the issue of guttation water, where plants, when they don't evaporate the water that they take up from the ground, they push it out in little droplets that look like dew. And these guttation drops become highly toxic to bees. So it turns out that neonicotinoids are not safer than the older products. Actually, when the older products were used, you had beekeepers occasionally complaining about losses that they suffered. Those were relatively isolated instances, but you didn't have a situation where the global beekeeping community is up in arms about a product group. That kind of shows you how safe these products actually are. We also have the issue that neonicotinoids, when they're used as systemics, are not compatible with integrated pest management, because integrated pest management requires you to look at, is the pest that you're trying to control actually present, and then and only then you want to try to control it with some measure. But a seed treatment is applied to the seed long before you know whether the pest is only is actually going to appear. So it's a prophylactic use, and it is not a use that is compatible with the principles of integrated pest management. Yes, spraying can be very dangerous to the environment, but if the pest is not there, you can choose not to spray. If you treated your seed with neonicotinoids, they're always there. You can make sure that you don't have drifts, that you spray when there's no wind. You can make sure that you spray at night when the bees are not foraging. So the contention that seed treatment is automatically better than spraying is not true. For the environment, it is important to use as few of these highly toxic substances as possible, regardless of whether you spray or you coat the seed.
Thank you. Number 11, and this is the final statement. Many crops are dependent on many crops are dependent on pollination. Hence, bees and agriculture is inherently linked, and pollination service should be available to farmers in a sustainable manner. Furthermore, Bayer is the main user of bee pollination services for our Invigor canola seeds business in Canada. Therefore, it makes no business sense for us to want to harm honeybees or cause a reduction in colony numbers.
Some of these statements are self-evident, and nobody is claiming that Bayer sees this as a business opportunity to harm honeybees. it is not their goal to do this, but they apparently care more about the profits that they're making with the sale of these products than they care about the bees and the beekeeping community. They're simply not willing to forego the profits that they're making in this area, even though the evidence is so overwhelming that their products are harmful to bees, that the European community pretty much had no choice but to issue a ban to products that they had approved earlier. The statements that Bayer is making about the role of bees are certainly true, but apparently they're not caring enough about the well-being of bees, not just our honeybees, but wild bees, bumblebees, that they're willing to at least reduce their marketing efforts of these highly dangerous substances.
Walter, thank you so much for all of your time and for your expert opinions about these statements. There's so much misinformation that is being put out there, and many people are still trying to figure out what is going on, what they can do, and so on and so forth. So it was just fantastic having you on the show today to go over many of these points, and I look forward to having you come back.
Yeah, it's certainly been my pleasure. And to your listeners, I would say, don't take my word for it. What is so significant about what the European community has done here is that their institution, EFSA, European Food Safety Authority, which has been criticized for many years for being too close to industry, when they looked at the scientific evidence, they concluded that these products need to be banned. And Bayer and the other chemical manufacturers had every opportunity in the world to point out to EFSA why they think their products are safe. And their arguments were simply not convincing. Many of the things that they're citing here, they've tried to put forward in the debate about this neonicotinoid ban in Europe, but the authorities and also the member states, when they voted, were not convinced, and neither should your listener be convinced by these arguments.
Thank you so much, Walter. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Steuer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone. And Walter, have a pleasant evening.
Thank you.